Hello, you amazing people out there, and welcome to the Amazing Action Comics podcast, where we are all about independent comics. I'm one of your hosts, Angel, with Ja Pepe.
Hey, we're here. It's still a thing. Welcome back.
Yes, after my three-week hiatus. I wish it was a vacation somewhere in a fucking island where it was just blue water and just naked women all over the place, but don't tell my wife.
Yeah, well, I was rebuilding my set.
Yeah, you're fucking set. It looks like there's dental floss holding that whole shit up.
It's a shoelace, actually.
Which is also dental floss. In some parts of the world.
Letterman dental floss, right?
Yes. All right, guys. Welcome back to another episode of the Indie Comic Review. I know it's been a couple of weeks. It's all John's fault, so it's all good. We'll move on. No, it's just life happens.
Life gets funny. Away,
we were talking about this last week, and I was like, all right, there's 7 days in a week. And anything and everything that could possibly happen to me happens to me on the one day that we fucking need to record. Shit.
There's also it's 7 days a week, and with your schedule, you're guaranteed to forget which day of the week it is.
Oh my god! Yeah,
it's hilarious. Crazy.
So this is the life of independent creators: is that we can't afford not to have multiple jobs. So on top of doing what we love the most in all the world that we can't fucking put food on the table with, yes, we need to do other things that we don't want to do in this world, and then still do this. So, yeah, we're back. So this is episode 111. I was doing the math in my head. That's a little over 2 years, right?
Yeah. I mean, but I came in around the mid-20s or so. You started this with Justin, right?
Yeah.
Then you were doing it by yourself for a little bit, and then you brought me in, and I've been having a blast. I've been loving it. Yeah.
It's been a bit, so it's good. I mean, we missed a couple of weeks here and there. It's probably closer to like 2.5 years, but it's all good.
5 years.
Yeah. Extended out. Well, you know what? If comic creators can delay their books, then we can delay our podcast every now and then.
Yeah.
So it's all good. It's all part of the creative process.
So you know what we are? We're the battle chasers of weekly podcasts.
Oh my god. You know what? I almost picked it up, but I knew nothing of that book. Are there 9 issues?
I think this is issue 10, right? There were 9 in the can, but it was like he did like 8 and then waited like 5-10 years, made video games, did like 9, and that was a big deal. He's like, oh yeah, 10's coming out. And then like what, 10 years later, we got number issue 10. Like
that's insane.
Yeah. And he's not even drawing this, Joe Madera. He's just writing this now. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, we got so many copies all over the place, but maybe it did well. Who knows? All right, Kang. So we do have a couple of books for you this week. So, you know, John and I sit there and we, you know, pick out books from the shelves from indie or small presses so that we can give our 2 cents in it. We do have some news, a little bit of news beforehand before we get into the reviews. So, why don't you take over and tell the fine folks the sad news.
Yeah, this stuff always bums me out. And we were talking about, you broke the news to me yesterday.
And you made me think I was fucking crazy.
Which is because, okay, so yeah. So unfortunately, we lost Jazzy John Romita, Marvel legend, right? The guy who really made Spider-Man the sort of commercial accepted image for many years. You know, he tweaked the Steve Ditko design, and that was your standard Spidey design, basically until Tom McFarlane came along and made that his own. And then big-eyed Spidey was the rage again. But, you know, the classic Spidey that we all kind of grew up with for licensing and everything, John Romita. Kingpin. John Romita, Wolverine. John Romita created the look of Wolverine, specifically the tiny cat eyes Wolverine, which I kind of like that mask. Punisher, John Romita. He also did a healthy run on Daredevil too, right before he moved over to Spider-Man. So this guy, I mean, he did everything for Marvel and had such a great and illustrious career. His son, John Romita Jr., is having an equally impressive and career longevity as his father. And sadly, yes, we lost John Romita Sr. at 93. The other day, and that is a blow. It had been a while since we had lost, you know, a creator of this magnitude, and that was where my confusion was in yesterday, because when you told me yesterday morning that you saw this news, I was like, didn't he like die like 2 or 3 years ago, like during that spate when we were losing Neil Adams, Denny O'Neill, George Perez, like all these creators were going, and I just, for some reason, I just completely Mandela affected that that John Romita Sr. had already passed away. Because I think what happened was when he turned 90, there was a big to-do, a big tribute to John Romita in the Marvel Comics. And I think he also announced his retirement from illustration at 90. And I think just in some way, I just sort of, you know, downward processing error in my brain, just conflated all that. And so when you were like, he died, I was like, didn't he die already? And so I'm really sorry for that.
No, it wasn't like a question. It was a statement.
It was
no,
really a statement.
He died before George Perez.
He died.
And that's why I didn't question it, because you were so definitive. And well, I hardly ever question anything that comes out of your mouth.
That's because I say it with such authority that, I'm convincing myself and others that it is true. It is just bullshit. I guess in my head, I just thought he had died in prison with Nelson Mandela in the 80s. And that was my story, and I was sticking to it. So, yeah, so like a couple hours later, I start seeing all this stuff. I was like, oh, man. Wow, that was bummer, you know. But again, I guess the fact that I already thought he was dead kind of softened the blow.
Yeah.
But boy, what a tremendous talent. I mean, cleanest line, I think, in comics. Just these defining looks for characters, like we talked about, like Spidey and Punisher and Wolverine and, you know, Mary Jane Watson. He drew Mary Jane's face for the first time, because Steve Ditko always had her like obscured by like a plant or shadow or whatever. I don't know why. I don't. Maybe Ditko just wanted her to be ugly, and Stan was like, "No, she's got to be gorgeous." And then Romita comes in and face a tiger, you hit the jackpot. And again, that iconic look of Mary Jane Watson, which really has been the standard for decades. Again, Todd McFarlane tweaked it for a little bit, so everybody kind of tweaked to Todd. But now we move right back into that sort of look for Mary Jane Watson, the long hair with the bangs and the dimples, and you know, just John Romita Sr., man, just an amazing and incredible artist. The industry would not be where it is if not for him. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. And to have his son, you know, follow his footsteps and do some great stuff too. And it's funny, because I think his son, like one of his best things, and it's a DC property. When they did the whole new era of New Heroes, The Silencer,
I think
he drew a couple of copies of that, the covers and stuff like that. I like the style. And it's funny, because like certain artists are really good at things, and he just does certain things really well. Like, I'm not crazy about his Superman. But like his Kick-Ass or the Silencer, those are great things that I really enjoy.
Yeah. And you know, it's great about JR Jr. is that he just didn't set out to copy his dad. You know, he developed his own unique style that is distinctly his, whereas his father had his own unique style that was distinctly his. And I think that's such a great legacy for that family. And I mentioned before the licensing. I mean, again, you know, from basically the 70s, even through to today to some degree, if you're seeing Spider-Man on a t-shirt, on a cup, a mug, something, you know, that was John Romita Sr. I mean, he kind of did the licensing handbook for the Marvel characters, the style guide that all these, you know, when they license these properties out for whatever, lunch boxes and whatnot, like, you know, that's the Spider-Man
image. Yeah.
Even the animated stuff too, Spider-Man is Amazing Friends, you know, that's, he did the model sheets for that. I mean, again, just that was what we grew up with, was that style. And for so many of us, that was Marvel. That was the Marvel style, was the John Romita, you know?
Right.
Tremendous loss, but an amazing career that he left behind.
It is. We were lucky enough to have it for when we had it. All right, cool. All right, so that's what we have for you in the news this week, guys. We're going to move now into the Indie Comic Review. We have four books for you for the week of June 14th in the year of our Lord 2023. So you know what? I'm going to start first, because this is sort of a little bit of indie news as well that clicks right into this. So where is it? So I got to see Transformers not last week or the weekend before, or something like that. And I know I had already mentioned it to you where, and if you haven't seen it, it's been fucking almost 3 weeks already. So yeah, fuck off if you got spoilers coming your way.
It's only been a week, actually. It opened last weekend.
No, it didn't.
Yeah.
Did it open last weekend? Holy shit. See, my time is all fucked up. All right. So no spoilers. But here's the deal. It was good. I actually like it. All right. So from what I am understanding about this franchise is there's been a soft reboot. of Transformers. So all the Michael Bay stuff is kind of just going out the window, which he did like, I think, what, 5-6 movies at this point?
5? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Bumblebee would have been the 6th. Yeah.
Well, Bumblebee's not included in
his. Right, as I say, would have been the 6th.
Right, so that's the soft reboot for Bumblebee, because in his new Transformers, there's sort of like a callback to that movie in a very subtle way. But yeah, it's funny because with the reboot, the main thing that I noticed is the design of the robots. They're not as complex as they were in the Michael Bay stuff. Like, you had to really look at it because there was so much going on in there. But here it almost feels like a step above the animation, the animated cartoon. So like RC looked like herself, the motorcycle, but it wasn't overly complex. It looks just like freaking the cartoon, yeah, but just more animated. If that makes any sense. So I really appreciated the direction that they're going in creating the Transformers. And it's crazy with the two films. We haven't got Megatron yet or anybody from the old school stuff, which is good because it allowed them to bring in new characters. Because from what I understand, I mean, there's the Transformers. I'm trying to go back to my childhood. And then there was every freaking type of Transformer that spawned out of that. So you had the Terracons, you had the Maximals, which are more recent, I believe. Mm-hmm. In our day, we had, was it the Sharkinators or Sharkticons?
They were the Sharkticons, yeah.
Remember them? Because they were at the bottom of the pit. They used to be with the, I don't know what they were called. It wasn't called the Tribunal.
It was just
the big head. Yeah, the Quintessence.
Quintessence, yeah.
And then obviously we had Unicron already, but there's a whole bunch of different races, different robots from when we were growing up that they're starting to bring in. So it's not just regurgitating the old stuff. The one major change they made in that freaking movie was how bloodthirsty Optimus Prime is. Like, every other line out of his mouth is, we're going to tear his head off.
Cut his head off. Kill him. I'm going to kill you.
And I was like, I was moving in my seat because I was just slightly uncomfortable because he's supposed to be like, sort of like a paladin, sort of like this pure spirit warrior.
Well, his pre-Optimus Prime name is Orin Pax. And Pax is Roman for peace. Right. And he was like this bookwormy like robot, right? And then he becomes Optimus Prime. But yeah, even the Optimus Prime we grew up with was always, you know, like he was like Superman. There's always another way. He didn't resort to killing. And then, of course, got himself killed a couple times. And
you know what? I'm going to say something about that because I'm so glad I didn't go to the movie theaters to watch that freaking movie.
Oh, when you were a kid?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I could imagine how many people. Devastated, traumatized
kids, and kind of ruined the G.I. Joe movie that came out afterwards because kids were so traumatized by the death of Optimus Prime that they had the animated G.I. Joe movie. They were going to kill Duke, and he gets hit in the chest with a snake by Serpentor doing the James Earl Jones Conan thing, right?
Spoilers, guys.
For a 30-year-old cartoon
yes,
movie.
I know.
And he's dead, right? And then they were like, we can't do this. Kids are crying because of this Transformers movie. And so they if you watch that movie, there's like this one shot at the end where Don Johnson's Falcon, I think, is talking to Duke in like a hospital bed, like, oh, I'm better, you know, I just got a snake in my heart, but I'm gonna be good, all right, you know. They just had to throw that in there just because the kids were so traumatized by Transformers. For me, I didn't actually see the movie in the theater. We were on Nantucket that summer, mm-hmm, and it didn't play at the movie theater that summer. I think it was Karate Kid 2 was what was playing that week. Nantucket, it was like a barn, and you went to a barn and you watched a movie. But there was a comic shop there with a spinner rack. I bought the first issue of the comic adaptation of the movie. Mm-hmm. So I read the first issue of the comic adaptation before I actually saw the movie. And right there in that first issue, he dies in the adaptation, like page 4, and I'm like, get out of here.
Yeah, that was major. Crushed a lot of kids' dreams and hopes there. Yeah. But yeah, so the property's been passed around, the license has been passed around, Hasbro's passed it around a couple, because it's Marvel had it for a while too, right?
Marvel actually started the comic license.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then IDW was the last one to have it. And so now we're making another leap and hop into another publisher. So that brings us to our very first book this week, which is called Void Rivals. And this is Robert Kirkman under his Skybound imprint. Yeah. So yeah, Robert...
And right. Image had had Transformers about 20 years ago, like with the Devil's Due stuff.
Yes.
So this is like a second go around now for Image or an imprint of Image having this. Yeah.
Correct. So
yeah, this is the best worst kept secret in comics this week. Was this announcement?
But it wasn't. It wasn't because it was already out.
Right.
It just wasn't in your face out.
Right. Like some retailers knew. Like some retailers were kind of given the drop on it. Right.
This preview was in a previous comic, in another Image comic. Yes. Yeah.
And there was also tons of rumbling when G.I. Joe hit 300 at IDW a few months ago. There was all this. Robert Kirkman is making a deal with Hasbro to buy G.I. Joe. And I think it was like, then there's the Transformers thing was sort of like hanging in the air. And then that preview kind of solidified this, what he's calling the Energon universe.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we have Void Rivals written by Robert Kirkman, artist Lorenzo DeFelici. He's used them before. Colorist Matthias Lopez, and then letters Russ Wooten. So basically what we mentioned is Robert Kirkman now has a license for G.I. Joe and Hasbro, and he's creating what's called sort of like this Energon universe. So he's created these two races that are going to be the central piece of the story, and then all these other characters from these worlds of Transformers and G.I. Joe are going to be ancillary. That's fucking amazing. Because they're not at the forefront. So to see these characters that we grew up with, timeless in comic books, just popping in and out of a centralized story that Robert Kirkman is creating, I think is really cool and unique. We haven't had something like that. So you already have universes that exist, and he's making up a universe to bring things that exist in other people's sandbox into his universe to play, which is really cool. Void Rivals, I got the blank copy because I think I'm going to draw something on it. Maybe just Optimus Prime saying, kill them all.
Cut his head off.
Cut his head off.
Optimus Prime holding Duke's head.
There's one. Yeah. Oh, that'd be fucking great. All right. And then, yeah, so this is the main cover underneath it. So you have basically two races that are at war with one another. Centurions and Algorons or something like that. I just can't pronounce these names because they're just so made up and it's crazy. Two races that are against one another. And basically you have them fighting in space. They hit each other and they slingshot each other out of, a gravitational pull or something, and they end up on this planet desolated together. And they have to find a way off this planet because both ships are damaged beyond repair, trying to unite both ships so they can get off the planet.
Ooh, it's like Enemy Mine.
Yeah, like Enemy Mine.
Yeah.
And you have a male and a female. In this, and even mine, I think he could switch his sex, couldn't he?
Yeah,
because it was a guy. Because it was speaking Luce after Jr.
Luce Cox Jr. Yeah, his, riding off that Oscar win from Officer
Iron
the
Eagle. Iron Eagle's better than Officer.
He's Gentleman. The class. I'm sorry. Quick digression. Like Cuba Gooding Jr. won the Oscar, right? And then did like garbage after
nothing.
Luce Cox Jr. was the trendsetter. He was awesome in An Officer and a Gentleman, right? Richard Gere wins Best Supporting Actor. Then does like 5 Iron Eagle movies, that Punisher movie that never was released theatrically with Dolph Lundgren. And he and then gets slathered in makeup for Enemy Mine, which is a great performance, but he's under a ton of makeup. And I'm like, you're buying Luis Gossett Jr. You're paying for Luis Gossett Jr. Put him in makeup and make him a chick.
Wait, so in the Punisher run, was the cop always black? Enemy Punisher run. That officer.
I think that's original to that movie. That officer.
No, because he's in every three movies. He's in all three movies. That cop.
The same cop.
Maybe not the same cop name, but they're all black. So I was wondering if there was a character. I have to go back and see if they're all named the same character.
I think it's sort of like, and it's funny because Punisher came out first, but I think it's sort of like the Albrecht situation, Ernie Hudson in The Crow, right? Where there's two different cops in The Crow. One's a white cop and one's like a black captain. And then they just kind of merge him together for The Crow movie.
Okay.
So I think it's sort of like that. Cause I think in some Punisher stories, there's usually a cop that he goes to, but it's never like a consistent guy.
Right.
One that sticks out the most is the Garth Ennis, Steve Dillon, Welcome Back, Frank.
Right.
Soap. Who doesn't
I haven't read that.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like the dumbest cop in the world, and he's trying to capture Punisher and just inadvertently winds up teaming with Punisher. And then Garth Ennis does some really even weirder stuff with that character.
So that would be Punisher Warzone. That was the last one. And we lost, what's his, what the hell's his name?
Ray Stevenson.
Ray Stevenson, yeah, we lost
him. I don't remember the cop in Punisher Warzone. I love that movie.
All right, so the cop was black.
Yeah.
The one, the FBI agent or whatever it was that was searching him for a while. And then the white dumb cop. You don't remember him?
Right,
He was the one that was helping Punisher from the very beginning.
Yes, yes, yes. So okay. I think that actually they do go and call him Soap in that movie. I got to watch that again.
I think it is.
I remember Newman from Seinfeld being cast as Microchip.
Yes.
And great casting. And he actually did a great job. And it really reflected that relationship in the comics at the time between the two characters. I thought it was really
cool. Right. That's cool. All right,
that's a huge digression. Yeah.
Yes.
So how is Void Rivals? How is the book?
All right. So basically you have this, it's beginning a universe that Robert Kirkman's created, and you know, he's done The Walking Dead. What was the last thing that he did that I read?
Firepower,
and it's still ongoing. Right before that there was
the Rip Grimes 2000 and the or 3000 from the Skybound.
Yep, and then the story about the two brothers that they keep going back and forth from the worlds. I just can't think of it at the top of my head. And then obviously he had Invincible prior to that. He's had some huge success.
Some
and
zombie thing that he did that a couple people got into.
Yeah, I already said The Walking Dead. Here's the thing, right? So when people are good at what they do and they surprise you originally, I think it's hard to repeat that over and over. And I'm going to go with M. Night Shyamalan, right? So he does this little movie called Sixth Sense, and everybody freaks out that motherfucking end. Spoilers, but this is fucking 20 years old or whatever. Freaks the fuck out. And he hasn't been able to recreate sort of that formula because you already expect him to do something that's unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
So with Robert Kirkman, you had Invincible, and that reveal with his father was fucking crazy. So we're looking at, you know, this is already in the 2000s, and comics have been around for a while. And, you know, it's been a while since we've been shocked. I think the last big shock was what? The death of Superman? Anything after that? Can you remember? Like 90s? After the 90s?
You know, and it's even the death of Superman wasn't, if you knew comics, it really wasn't that much of a shock. But I would say to the world at large.
To the world at large,
I think that would be the biggest one that had the biggest reach. Yeah.
Right. And we haven't had anything really since then that I can think of. I mean, they've tried stuff. I mean, we recently had spoilers if you're not reading Amazing Spider-Man. Mary Jane died, but not Mary Jane.
Yeah, whole bait and switch, yeah.
Yes. So stuff like that, I think we've seen it so many times that we're already used to it. And along comes Robert Kirkman. It's early 2000s, and he got that switch with the father. You know what I'm talking about in Invincible, right?
Yeah.
Where his father's freaking actually the baddie, which is crazy. And then they have that insane fight, beating the shit out of each other. And then you have Walking Dead after that. And it's not so much of a reveal as much as it is about a story about people set in this zombie world. And if you're reading comics, you're expecting zombies to be chomping on brains, not being expected to be, you know, tugged at your heartstrings and being, you know, drawn into character development and falling in love with characters, but understanding not to fall in love with the characters because they may not be there a couple of issues down the road kind of thing. So he's not afraid to kill people off and mess with people's emotions. Oblivion Song, that's the one.
Yes.
So then you got stuff like Oblivion Song, you got stuff like Firepower, and they're all different spectrums of genre and storytelling that are so different from one another that you could swear it's not the same writer writing these books. So I think Robert Kirkman just has, first of all, I know that he loves comics because of his story, you know, just trying to get with these Image guys for so long, visiting them, coming from a small place in the Midwest that didn't have, you know, comic book store. I had to travel a long time to get comics. So we know that he loves the medium. And we can tell in the way that he writes and the projects that he creates. And he's, you know, at the back of this issue, this is where I'm getting at. He writes this thing about his love for Transformers and G.I. Joe. And as he's writing this, like, sort of like love letter at the end, and this whole, you know, series is going to be a love letter to those two things. He's sitting in a room filled with Transformers and G.I. Joes all over the wall. And so that kind of love for the medium, for what it is that you do, that comes across in the writing. It comes across in the projects that he puts himself on and what he releases. So I would say this is no different. So I really like the way that it was written. We don't get a whole lot of those two groups. We get one transformer in here. I'm not going to tell you who it is. But that's kind of set sort of like the precipice of where this is going to be going.
But you can reveal that it is a robot, not which robot, but it is a robot.
Correct. Correct. I won't tell you which, if it's a good guy, bad guy, whatever it is.
Forbes.
So you have these two characters, these two rivals. And it's funny because a lot of the times warring factions that finally get to meet one another in person, one-to-one, never know why they're fighting in the first place. They just have their set of rules that they blindly follow. And it reminded me, honestly, of Enemy Mine, because those two guys were at each other's throats with their, you know, set morals and values of what they thought the other species was and what their species was. And it's the same thing here. So you have these two warring factors. They're talking to each other like, hey, you're an asshole because you're this. Hey, you know, you're an asshole because you're this, kind of thing. And you got this really nice, cool moment at the very end that leaves you wanting to know not just about, all right, when is the next, you know, Transformer or G.I. Joe? How are they going to get rolled in? But now I'm actually invested in these characters to see what's going to happen with these two, if they're going to get off the rock and so forth. So, yeah, Void Rivals, if you're a Transformers person, G.I. Joe person, or even if you're just a Robert Kirkman fan, or just a fan of really good storytelling, definitely my pick of the week, pick up Void Rivals. It's under Image Comics, under the Skybound imprint.
Now, I didn't read this, but I looked through it, and one of the things I really liked that was impressed was the art style, because it was a very sort of simple art style. It was, you know, it wasn't too busy, which, again, when you're dealing with something like, what G.I. Joe would be with the tech and the things like that, and what Transformers would be with the tech, there's always a sense of, if you're doing something to introduce that, you know, you want a very heavily detailed art style to really get like all the nuts and bolts and gears and stuff like that, to say, so to speak. But I liked this very kind of clean line work and sort of muted color choice on this, because I think color is very important to what's going on in this story. Yes. So I thought that was a great artistic choice of artist. I thought that was a really cool way to go. And I'm very intrigued about what's laid out for the future, because there's a Transformers number one coming out.
Yep. Duke number one
and a Cobra Commander number one. Yep. So they're not going right into G.I. Joe, which I think is a really cool way to set G.I. Joe up. And Void Rivals is not a one-off. This is also a continuing series. Correct. As well.
I think this is going to be the centralized portion of where everything else kind of comes in.
Yeah. Now, is Kirkman writing the other three books at this time, or?
Oh, you know what? It's a good question. Hold on. Let me just check, because it's in the back, the solicitations.
Yeah.
So that is a good question. But yeah, so, you know, as much as I love Robert Kirkman, you fucking asshole. You're going to make me buy all these books now. You son of a bitch. All right. No. So here it goes.
Okay.
So Transformers, which I'm absolutely getting, number one.
Because you know why?
Daniel Warren Johnson. Look at that. Fucking.
Isn't that great? Prime.
Dude, that is fantastic.
And another great artistic choice, right?
So, yeah. Yeah.
And
he's
writing and illustrating Transformers.
I believe so. That's all. It's just his name on the marker. Yeah. Then you have Duke is written by Joshua Williamson.
Hmm.
And I guess art by Tom Riley.
Mm-hmm.
And then Joshua Williamson is also doing Cobra Commander with Andrea Milana.
Yeah.
So then he's got a bunch of people coming. Best well-kept secret.
And as far as...
Listen, all right, so before I cut you off. I'm going to cut you off. So there was this really good run. I think it was a four-issue miniseries. And this is IDW. And I told them they fucked up, because it was Transformers versus Terminator.
Right.
That was about maybe a year and a half, almost 2 years ago. It was a ridiculously well-written, awesome miniseries, and I'm pretty sure if they would have marketed the shit out of it, they would have sold way more than what they did. So they missed an opportunity there. So I'm hoping, I mean, we'll see what happens, because this was sort of like it was a best kept secret. You got Void Rivals, which doesn't have anything in the title to bring you to G.I. Joe Transformers.
Yeah.
But they're going to be the central part of the Energon world.
And as far as you know, from what you've read on Void Rivals and anything else you read, this is a brand new version of that Transformers G.I. Joe universe. This is not a continuation of the Marvel and the IDW, because the IDW is a continuation of Marvel and blah, blah, blah. So that's going to be cool. I'm really curious about the Cobra Commander because, again, that horrible G.I. Joe movie introduced this concept that that Cobra Commander was a snake guy, right? A snake, not snake eyes, but a snake guy, Cobra LA. And what I always loved about the original G.I. Joe comics, you know, from Larry Hama, was that he wore the mask because he was a well-known businessman. Started this cult, right? This sort of terrorist organization, and people would know who he was, and we wanted to do this clandestine, and that's why he would always cover his face. So I really hope that they're going for that aspect with the Cobra Commander stuff. So I'm really intrigued by that. I really don't care about Duke, so I'm probably not going to check.
Well, we'll see if we get even any origin stories, if it's just going to pop into, you know, whatever they're doing. So
yeah, just don't make him a snake man. Just don't make him a snake man. Make him a guy, a normal guy who just happens to run a snake themed terrorist organization. Cause that's really what we want from the world.
Yes. Just a snake themed
terrorist organizations.
Void Rivals, Skybound Entertainment under Image. Check them out. All right. You're up. What do you got?
I'm gonna start with a new Opus comic presentation. Opus is also, I guess, an imprint of Incendium, and Opus has this deal with the Frank Frazetta estate to do Frank Frazetta inspired stories. So we've covered Death Dealer. We both reviewed that number one. We really like that.
Which is great. Yep.
And it continues to be really good, right? Yes. There was a Dawn Attack. There's a Tales of Science Fiction. And then there's this that came out this week called Frank Frazetta's Mothman. And one thing I just always feel kind of weird with Opus is, you know, it's Frank Frazetta's Mothman, Death Dealer, Frank Frazetta's whatnot, and they're, you know, using classic Frank Frazetta artwork as the secondary cover and not the main cover, and I always find that weird. I'm like, why not just put the Frank stuff as the main cover? But that's neither here nor there as far as that goes. So what I thought was really neat about this, because I, you know, a lot of the Frank Frazetta stuff is really sort of a medieval, you know, Conan the Barbarian-esque time period set. Fantasy tales, but the Mothman, as you might know from you know, that another Richard Gere movie, the Mothman Chronicles, I think. There's Mothman is a thing that exists and has been cited mainly in the West Virginia area. And there was a whole thing, I think, in the late 60s, early 70s, a bridge collapsed, and people claim they saw this Mothman cause the bridge collapse. And, you know, just Mothman is like one of those phenomena that almost every state has. Here in New Jersey, we have the Jersey Devil, right, from the Pine Barrens. You know, it's like akin to Bigfoot, Sasquatch, all that stuff, you know, that probably doesn't exist, but maybe it does. The cryptids, right? That's what they call them. So I was like, oh, this is interesting. Is this going to be a medieval take on the Mothman? And it actually isn't. It's a contemporary story, which I thought was really cool. And it does take place in West Virginia, but it discards, I think, or at least as of this first issue, doesn't have any references to the existing Mothman mythology. So basically what you have is an alien ship crash lands in this rural part of West Virginia. You have two feuding families that just want to blow each other to bits. So they each think the other one is responsible for this explosion in the woods. One family thinks it's their rivals just setting off explosives. The other family thinks it's their rivals and their makeshift meth lab finally blew up. They all go into this location, guns ablazing, right, to sort of take out the other side. And then you also have this this podcaster who does podcasts about UFO crashes, cryptids, all that kind of stuff, all the paranormal stuff. And he is like so self-serious that like he just is a walking parody of that type of podcaster. And I think he's probably one of the best characters in that, just because his just whole demeanor, his whole thing just sort of oozes comedy, just because he is such a parody of that. And it's done really well. Then you also have a story, you know, you have another thing with a woman, a young woman and her grandmother, and how they sort of tie into it is very interesting. So you kind of get like the family rivalry thing, you know, the Hatfields versus the McCoys type thing. You get the paranormal podcaster, and then you get the family drama with the woman and her you know, grandmother, who's kind of at death's door and really just she doesn't care because she's taking her pills with booze out of the bottle because it's easier that way for her. So I thought that was a really cool dynamic. And then in the middle of this, you have a Mothman. So it's really funny because the Mothman is given probably the most personality in this book. He's not this mysterious, terrorizing character. He's like akin to some teenager who stole a car for a joyride, wound up crashing it, and now has to figure out how he gets out of this mess. So he's talking to this dog that belongs to one of the families that he just happens to scoop up as they're chasing after him. Excuse me. So he's sitting there and he's sort of relaying all this information to the dog. And it's great. It just sort of humanizes the cryptid paranormal aspect of it, which I thought was a great touch. If you like that sort of paranormal X-Filesy thing, but something that's really tongue-in-cheek and it's going to make you chuckle, this Frank Frazetta's Mothman by Opus is great. And I totally forgot to give the credits. So we have script by Tim Hedrick, the first 7 pages penciled by Andrea Muti, illustrated and inked by Gigi Baldassini. Then Luis Guaragna does the rest of the book. First 7 pages colored by Valerio Aloro, rest of the book colored by Oscar Carreño, letter by Jacob Baskill, edited by Denton Tipton, R.G. Yarena, and Holly Interlandi. Yeah, so Frank Frazetta's Mothman, really fun, goofy stuff. I liked it.
Cool. All right, check it out. You heard it there. First, foremost. All right, I'm up.
Excuse
so
me.
This is our third book of 4. This one is called Click, Click, Boom. This is also from Image Comics. This is written by Doug Wagner. And I kept going in my head, who the hell is Doug Wagner? I know that name. And now I know why I know that name. The art is by Doug Dabbs, colors by Matt Wilson, and letters by Duke Shire. So Doug Wagner, really, I don't want to say weird, but just out there writer. Because the last thing that I read from him was, I started to read Vinyl, didn't finish it, was going to get in a trade. But Plastic I read all the way through, and Plush. And they all pretty much follow sort of like this kind of same theme of like serial killer and just off the beat, you know, people that are weird. And this one is not as outright weird as the previous things that I read from him. But it's still weird in a Doug Wagner kind of way. So basically what you have is this mute girl who communicates through taking Polaroid pictures. Fantastic. Because as a creator, you're challenged, right? You want to be challenged. And you're like, yeah, we're gonna do a comic. But the actual character doesn't speak. So expressions have to be there. All right, so how are they going to communicate? They're going to use Polaroid pictures. So now you have to be able to convey in a Polaroid picture what she wants to communicate. So it's fucking hilarious because as confused as the people are in the book that she's communicating with, you're just as confused. And if you figure out shit before the people that figure it out in the comic book, then you're a genius because I haven't done it yet. I don't even know if she has a name yet, which is crazy because they don't mention her name. But basically you have this woman, she's, you know, from the beginning, she's taking these Polaroid pictures of people. I mentioned she's a mute. And there's been sort of like this thing that's been happening with this corporation. It's a shell corporation that's been doing some weird, shady things, and we only know this because there's a podcaster. You're mentioning podcasters. There's a podcast journalist that's been following the story of the shell company doing these really weird things, and she's trying to make a name for herself. And I think they call Minerva or something like that. So the mute, the main character, the protagonist, walks into a bank one day. And it's funny because you don't see anything. You just hear blam, blam, screaming and all this stuff. And then you see a chair kind of just jump out the window. And so this comes onto the news, and she falls on the radar of this podcast journalist lady. So she goes down to this place to find out if she could find out anything. And she's all the while, she's really insecure about herself. She's trying to talk herself up. She has her podcast listeners who are edging her on to go down there and try to get some answers. Now, I already know this is going to be a shady place. So we'll come to find out that the accountants that were killed, because this woman who went in there and killed these accountants had been to other facilities that were owned by Minerva as well. But this is the first incident in which she's killed somebody. And these two accountants actually had guns on them. So she's questioning as to, you know, what kind of accountants carry guns on them? What does Minerva have to hide? And all this. So they have a run-in with one another because when she goes into the bank to ask questions, she's being followed when she leaves and is asked to leave. First of all, they already knew who she was. So that's scary as shit right there. So I would have been like, you know what? You guys have it. I know nothing. I'm walking out right now with my life and my balls in my hands. So they follow her. The protagonist ends up, you know, saving her, whatever it is. And then it basically ends with her being in her apartment, kind of finding out how she communicates with all these. She has tons of Polaroids around, figures out that she's mute, and figures out at least one portion of her past, which is a picture of a guy that she leaves. And we had one little flashback. It's a Vietnam, a guy that was in the Vietnam War that pretty much trained her in the art of war. So we don't know what that connection is yet. So it's sort of like these little flashbacks that you get a piece of the story that's going to kind of take you up to why she's doing what she's doing. Is she doing it because Minerva did something to him and killed him, and now she's seeking revenge? Or is there something else in there? It was really unique. It had, you know, the art is really great. It still falls under sort of like that, the way that Doug Wagner writes, sort of like that really, that muted color palette. And it really focuses on the character's expressions, which is always good because this is a really good, like, masterpiece book for me to pick up. Because when you're dealing with characters that don't communicate in the word balloons, then they have to communicate with their facial expressions. Yes. And all the supporting characters have to be able to react to what that character's doing. So, yeah, the artist did a really good job. Doug Dabb did a really good job on this. So I really dug it. And it's a lot. I mean, I could probably count how many word balloons there are in like two hands, which is crazy. But there's a lot that's communicated through. So really intrigued. And because it's the Doug Wagner book, I know it's probably not going to go more than five or six issues because he writes them in this lot. So I'm invested right now because I really want to know her backstory in regards to was she always a mute? Is she just not speaking on purpose? Or is it something that's, you know, physical there? And then what this connection is with this guy and what she's doing and how the journalist is going to help her now. Because now you have to have somebody that's going to be communicating the story. And now we have this podcast journalist that's probably going to be tagging along with her and being sort of like the voice or her voice. Kind of like, oh, is that what you mean? Oh, is that what you're saying? But it didn't come across that way. So, but I know why we need that person. So click, click, boom. Yeah, it's... I wouldn't even know what to categorize it as, but there's definitely some action in there. Yeah, and I want to see where it goes. So check it out. I liked it a lot. So cool. Nice. Doug Wagner, keep doing what you're doing, bro. All right, last book.
Last book is from Image, and it's another Image imprint, Top Cow. This is Mark Silvestri's imprint for Image. And Silvestri. Yes. And this is Haunt You to the End. And it is written by Ryan Cady. And it's the full issue this time is illustrated by Andrea Muti, lettered by Frank Zvetkovic, edited by Elena Salcido and Matt Hawkins. And so this is really cool. So it's funny that Andrea Muti wound up working on two different books. Like I said, the first seven pages of Frank Frazetta's Mothman being inked by somebody else, and then a third person doing colors. And this book, Haunt You to the End, is all Muti all the time, full issue, pencils, inks, colors, all by Andrea Muti. And I really like Muti's art style because it's simple but detailed, and really does create a mood, but with an economy of line that I really appreciate, and a great use of light and shadow. And it complemented itself really well to for the seven-page prologue for Mothman, and then went into a slightly different, slightly more heavier line and slightly more detailed art style, which fit the rest of the book really well. But this, I thought this whole issue was just gorgeously illustrated and really conveys what's going on. And what is going on is that this is another one of those dystopian future Earths where if we don't get our climate problem under control, we are going to start losing pieces of this planet. So it takes place at the dawn of the 22nd century. And basically what you have is a very rich man who is going to haunted locations, right, that are still there. So it sort of opens in Hollywood. They're looking for artifacts, and one artifact slash souvenir that they uncover is on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, Vincent Price's star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And then from there, there's like a haunted building, you know, nearby that they go into. And you kind of see that as a prologue. And that's just sort of a setup because the rich guy hires this reporter who has been doing stories about him, and the reporter is very skeptical about what this rich guy is doing. He doesn't trust the rich oligarch elites, partly why he's an investigative journalist, doesn't believe in the paranormal, which is why this rich guy hires him, because he wants to make a believer out of him. And the whole reason why this guy is doing this is because as the world is dying around them, the idea of an afterlife gives us hope that there's something more. And it's really illustrated. It's illustrated really well with a quote that Stanley Kubrick said to Stephen King when they were making The Shining. And Stanley Kubrick said to Stephen King, "I think ghost stories are fundamentally optimistic, don't you? If there are ghosts, then that means we survive death." And that's the whole point of why this guy is doing these expeditions. So he puts this team together with this journalist, and they go to this island called Isla Lodo, the Island of Mud, right? And there, because that since 1906, the island had been controlled by an oil company. And there's a mansion there called the Rasmussen Manor. And it is, in theory, the most haunted, the last haunted house on Earth is what it's being billed as. And the reason that they have this immediacy to go to this this island and investigate this haunted house is because in a matter of days, the island is going to sink completely into the ocean. Mm-hmm. I thought that's a great hook because it really raises the stakes. And it combines something I really don't like, the dystopian future of if we don't fix our carbon emissions and climate stuff, things are going to be bad. Not that I don't believe it or fundamentally, feel strongly against climate change, because I think it's a thing and I try to do my part and whatnot. But I like a more contemporary story. Right. And especially if it's a ghost story. So to do something like this haunted house story in a dystopic future where the stakes are that high, where if they don't get off this island, they're done. And then you add to the fact that as they're flying over this island, the very healthy pilot unexplainably has a seizure and they have to make an emergency crash landing on this island, really raises the stakes as well, and takes something that for me is so, because, you know, I'm not going to be around at the beginning of the 22nd century. So, right. So it's so far out of reach for me to really buy into it. But it takes something that I do love, which is a good haunted house ghost story, and puts it together in a way that I really dug. So cool. I'm really into this. And I don't know if it's a mini, but I really want to see where this goes, how much they do with it. And just a great first issue that sets it up cleanly and really made sense. And I didn't feel any sort of confusion going into this, you know, dystopic future, but because there were some really good touchstones to contemporary stuff.
Right.
So melded it really well. So Haunt You to the End. Cool. I really dug it.
All right, guys, check it out. All right, so there you go. So we got 4 books for you this week. Some sad news. Hopefully we'll have some better news for you this week or next week, we should say.
Or 3 weeks.
Yeah. As far as movies are concerned, definitely check out Transformers because I really liked it. Especially if you want to hear Optimus Prime, every other word out of his mouth is just kill them all. It's fantastic, but just really well done. And then the 4 books that we had this week. So we've got plenty to keep you occupied until then. If you like what you're hearing, make sure you click subscribe to the podcast. If you want to join us, if you're a creator and you know have a project, you want to promote yourself and or your project, amazingactioncomics.com/podcast. Fill up the form. We'd love to have you on. Please stay up to date with everything that we got going on over at Amazing Action Comics at amazingactioncomics.com. And as always, please, please, please support your local comic book shop, because without our support, your support, they would not exist. And if they don't exist, then we have nothing to do on Thursdays. Right, Phil?
Yes, we have nothing to do on Thursdays except for this.
Correct. And where do you get your comics from?
Well, I get my comics at The Joker's Child in Fairlawn, New Jersey. Come on down to get all these great comics, maybe catch up on some Transformers back issues, maybe check out some of the IDW G.I. Joe stuff, or even get some cool old Marvel G.I. Joe comics. We also got a whole bunch of Pops in. We bought a huge collection of Pops. Pops are still a thing, man. They're not going anywhere. People are getting these Pops. I'm putting a Pop up on the wall and boom, it's gone like 5 minutes later. So these are not going to last because there's some really good gems in this Pop collection. We got all that and so much more at the Joker's Child in Fairlawn, New Jersey. Come on down, say hi. Be a friendly face and you'll get a friendly face back. I don't know why I just said that. That just sounded really weird. But yeah, come on down to the Joker's Child.
Yes, you just get everybody from coming to the East Coast. All right, if you can't make it to our neck of the woods, then please visit your local comic shop. Show some love and support. All right, kiddies, until next time, please, please, please be amazing. Stay amazing and read something amazing.